Today we are reading from Canto 3, Chapter 29. Chapter 29 is entitled Explanation of Devotional Service, and today we are on Text 7. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha,
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha,
Bhakti Yogo Bahuvidho,
Bhakti Yogo Bahuvidho,
Bhakti Yogo Bahuvidho,
Bhakti Yogo Bahuvidho,
Margir Bhamini Bhavyate,
Margir Bhamini Bhavyate,
Margir Bhamini Bhavyate,
Margir Bhamini Bhavyate,
Swabhava Guna Margena,
Swabhava Guna Margena,
Swabhava Guna Margena,
Swabhava Guna Margena,
Pumsambhavo Vibhidyate,
Pumsambhavo Vibhidyate,
Sambhava Vibhidyate, Margir Bhamini Bhavyate,
Margir Bhamini Bhavyate,
Swabhava Guna Margena,
Swabhava Guna Margena,
Sambhava Vibhidyate,
Sambhava Vibhidyate,
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha,
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha,
Bahuvidho,
Bhakti Yoga Bahuvidho,
Margir Bhamini Bhavyate,
Margir Bhamini Bhavyate,
Swabhava Guna Margena,
Swabhava Guna Margena,
Pumsambhavo Vididyate,
Pumsambhavo Vididyate,
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
The personality of Godhead replied. Bhakti Yoga.
Bhakti Yoga.
Devotional service. Bahuvidha.
Bahuvidha.
Multifarious.
Multifarious.
Marge.
Marge.
With paths.
Paths.
Bhamini.
Bhamini.
O noble lady.
O noble lady.
Bhavyate.
Bhavyate.
Is manifest.
Manifest.
Svabhava.
Svabhava.
Nature.
Nature.
Guna.
Guna.
Qualities.
Qualities.
Margena.
Margena.
In terms of behavior.
Umsam.
Of the executors.
Bhava.
The appearance. Vividyate.
Is divided.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Lord Kapila, the personality of Godhead, replied, O noble lady, there are multifarious parts of devotional service in terms of the different qualities of the executor. Purport. Pure devotional service in Krishna consciousness is one, because in pure devotional service, there is no demand from the devotee to be fulfilled by the Lord. But generally people take to devotional service with a purpose. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, people who are not purified take to devotional service with four purposes. A person who is distressed because of material conditions becomes a devotee of the Lord and approaches the Lord for mitigation of his distress. A person in need of money approaches the Lord to ask for some improvement in his monetary condition. Others who are not in distress or in need of monetary assistance but are seeking knowledge in order to understand the absolute truth also take to devotional service, and they inquire into the nature of the Supreme Lord. This is very nicely described in Bhagavad Gita 7.16. Actually, the path of devotional service is one without a second. But according to the devotee's condition, devotional service appears in multifarious varieties, as will be nicely explained in the following verses. Om Ajnanatimirandhyasya Jnananjanashalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Padamahiyam Dadati Svapadanjalikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Lakvayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyaiva cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitya Nanda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaurabhaktavrinda.
Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna. So we are continuing the conversation between Kapila Dev and his mother Devahuti. Since many chapters, in fact most of the third canto comprises of the conversation between Kapila Dev and Devahuti. Devahuti has been asking certain questions to Kapila Dev, and Kapila Muni is explaining. He is giving an answer to these questions. So in the previous chapters he described in detail material nature. He also touched some aspects of devotional service in one of the previous chapters. And in this chapter he is now giving an explanation of devotional service. And in fact there are some very nice verses which are to follow in this particular chapter. So today, in today's verse, Kapila Muni is replying to Mother Devahuti's question about execution of devotional service and how is it executed by different types of people. So here he is replying that there are multifarious parts of devotional service in terms of different qualities of the executor. And Srila Prabhupada is quoting the famous verse from Bhagavad Gita, Artho Artharthi Jigyasu. Prabhupada is quoting that verse that actually devotional service is pure and it is one without a second. And many you know, people in the material world fall, most of the populace falls under that category. Either people approach the Lord because they are in material distress or because they want money. So most of the people fall in these two categories when they approach the Lord. So many people approach the Lord for mitigation of their material distress, as Srila Prabhupada is describing in the purport. And one of the famous examples for this particular section of people is Gajendra. So we know the pastime of Gajendra from Bhagavatam, how Gajendra was in a very severe materially distressed condition. He was actually in the jaws of death. He was sporting, and Prabhupada describes the life over there in the purports during Gajendra's pastime, that he was sporting in the water with his wives and his children and his friends. And Prabhupada gives analogy that all of us are similar in this material. We all are nicely living our lives with our family, our friends, thinking that nothing is going to happen. You know, life, we will just sail through life like this. Gajendra was also in that condition. He was nicely sporting and he was the head of the family. So he was having that control over his family and he was thinking everything's in control. I have everything in place. But when he entered the water, suddenly a crocodile caught his leg. So Prabhupada describes it and he gives an example, or he compares this to the jaws of death. Anytime anybody can enter the jaws of death, there is no guarantee at all when you will be done. And Prabhupada describes that no one was there to then help Gajendra. His family members could not help. They were just waiting on the banks of the river. And they were all crying and they were all expressing their sympathy. But they were not able to take Gajendra out of the situation that the providence had put him in. So then Gajendra realizes some prayers that he had actually memorized in his previous lifetime. And then he offers those prayers to the Lord while offering a lotus flower which he could pick up from the ocean. And Prabhupada also describes in that section of the Bhagavatam and in various other places that there are many people in this world who might be in distress, but not everyone approaches the Lord for mitigation of their distress. Like very recently in my workplace, my team leader in fact faced a similar situation. She, her partner actually met with an accident. I think he works in the construction field, and there was an excavator which crushed her partner. And his entire pelvis is broken right now. It's crushed. So they are thinking of amputation. They don't know what has to be done. And my team leader is broken right now. She's a young lady. She must be 30, 32 years old. She's broken. She was in tears. And, you know, when we ask her, how is your partner? She says, at least he's alive. So, you know, that is the situation. He has been put into induced coma. But then do we see her approaching the Lord? Do we see them coming to the temple or going to a place of worship like a church or whatever faith they may believe in? No, not everybody who's in distress will approach the Lord. So Prabhupada explains there has to be piety in that person's life. Only then they approach the Lord. Otherwise, they don't approach the Lord. They just get overwhelmed by their material distress, or they will take to some other means. They will go on a long drive with friends. I know of some people who do that. Or they'll take to drinking. They feel that that will actually lessen their problems. So these are some of the paths which non-pious people take up when they are in material distress. So even in distress, so we should not look down, Prabhupada actually explains, we should not look down on people who are approaching the Lord when they are in a materially distressed condition. Because sometimes as devotees, we consider ourselves, you know, we look down on people. We think we are on that platform, we are into pure devotional service. And look at him, they are just coming. When they are in distress, they come to the temple. Otherwise, they don't come. But at least they are coming to the temple for that. They are approaching. They are at least recognizing that there is a higher authority. They are at least recognizing that, yes, I should take shelter of this higher authority for mitigation. And he has the power to actually give me some solution. So it is actually a glorious thing if people are approaching the Lord, because there is some piety they must have accumulated in their lives to be able to have that feeling that they can approach the Lord. The second example Prabhupada gives is of people who are in need of money. Again, most of the population falls in that category. In Kali Yuga especially, everyone wants to have more and more wealth. Putram dehi, dhanam dehi. That is the whole, you know, criteria of approaching. In fact, once people were standing in a queue at a famous temple in Bombay. It's called Siddhivinayak Temple. It's in a suburb called Dadar. And there was just some news people, like, you know, some media people just did a random research, like a survey of all the people who were standing in the queue. Because especially on Tuesdays, that is considered the day of Lord Ganesha. So, and that temple is of Lord Ganesha. So many people were standing in the queue on Tuesdays, and on Tuesdays there's a long queue. And there was a survey which was done, and random people were just asked, why are you here in this queue? And most of the answers which were obtained was people wanted either a job, that is why they were standing in the queue, or they had some severe material distress, that is why they were standing in the queue, or there were some health problems, either they were facing or their family members were facing, or they were in severe need of money, or son was not listening, wife is not listening, problem with in-laws. So different types of problems because of which people were standing. But not one person gave a reply that he's standing there without any expectations just because he wants to express his love to Lord Ganesha. There was not one person who gave that reply. So we see, if we, you know, do survey, most of the people approach the Lord for this. And famous example which is given in the Bhagavatam of a person who approached the Lord for satisfying his monetary distress was Dhruva Maharaj. So Dhruva Maharaj approached the Lord because he wanted, actually he was so insulted. He's a Kshatriya, so he felt very insulted when his stepmother asked him to get down from the lap of his father. His Kshatriya blood was boiling when he was insulted like that. And then, as advised by his real mother, he went into the forest to do some devotional, to execute austerities, to please the Lord. But the whole purpose of him executing the austerities was to attract the Lord so that he can ask for a kingdom greater than his grandfather. And his grandfather was none other than Brahma. So what greater kingdom? Brahma is the owner of this whole, he is the controller of this whole material creation. But he wanted something greater than that. But Prabhupada says that, you know, whatever purpose you have, in fact Bhagavatam says, whatever purpose you have, always approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead to mitigate your distress. Whether it's a monetary distress, health distress or material situation that you are in, please approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because Krishna knows what is best for you. Krishna is not like the shopkeeper. Demigods are compared to the shopkeeper. If you approach a demigod with the same purpose that you have, like you want money or you want your material situation to improve, a demigod will just give you based on what your karma is, and he will give you that, he might give you mitigation from those problems. However, Krishna knows what is best for you. So demigods are compared to the shopkeeper. If you pay them, they will give you, they are bound to give you whatever you need. However, Krishna, he's like the loving father. So for example, if somebody goes to the shopkeeper with money and he asks for let's say cigarettes. Now if that person is above 18, the shopkeeper is bound to give the cigarettes to them because he can pay. He has the money to pay for the cigarettes. However, a loving father will give a slap. The son might have enough money, maybe he's earning also, but the father who knows cigarettes are not good for his son, he will actually give him a slap. So in the same way, Krishna is compared to a loving father. So even if we have distress, Prabhupada encourages us to approach Krishna. Go and approach Krishna, because he might not only remove the material distress if he wants to, but he will also purify your heart of the material desire that is there in your heart. And that situation happened in the case of Dhruva Maharaj. When actually Krishna gave him darshan, Dhruva Maharaj offers prayers to the Lord, to Vishnu. And he says that, what was I doing? I was actually after broken pieces of glass when you are a diamond, my Lord. So I was asking for something which is so silly, according to Dhruva Maharaj, which is not something which someone should ask for from you, because you can give much greater things than that. So Dhruva Maharaj's heart got purified. The entire austerities he executed for so many months, for 6 months or something, was just to achieve the purpose that he wants a greater kingdom. But in a moment that desire got purified. As soon as he got darshan of the Lord, he wanted nothing but pure devotional service unto the Lord. He wanted nothing but association of devotees. Dhruva Maharaj prays. Although the Lord is present in front of him, he prays, give me the association of your loving devotees so that they keep me in devotional service. And he compares his own desire to broken pieces of glass. So these are some of the examples which Prabhupada is talking about in this particular section. And then Kapila Muni will continue describing different people who approach the Lord for devotional service. He describes devotional service in the mode of ignorance, in the mode of passion, and then in the mode of goodness. In the next three verses, Kapila Muni will describe that. And then the fourth verse after today's verse, Kapila Muni will describe about pure devotional service. And devotional service executed in Shuddha Sattva or on the transcendental platform. And there Kapila Dev gives examples of devotees who actually don't want anything from the Lord, who are approaching the Lord just with the purpose of serving the Lord and with the purpose of pleasing the Lord through execution of their devotional service. They are actually completely ahaituki apratrihata. They actually are completely, their love is unconditional and they have no expectations. That is a section which Kapila Dev will describe to Devahuti in the fourth verse from today. So today is the disappearance day of one such Vaishnava who had approached the Lord, who was completely on the unconditional loving platform. The fourth verse from today which Kapila Dev will describe, where devotees render devotional service without any expectations at all. They don't have any conditions attached to their devotional service, neither do they want anything fulfilled for themselves. Their whole purpose in life is to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that particular person whom we will spend the rest of the class discussing is Shripad Madhavendra Puri. It's his disappearance day today. In fact, in many temples, today begins the celebration of Gaur Purnima. From Ekadashi, they begin the celebration of Gaur. The tenets of pure devotional service, we wouldn't even realize the value of Lord Krishna and Janmashtami. So for Gaudiya Vaishnavas, this is the most important day. Gaur Purnima, which we are going to celebrate on this Sunday. And it's a very auspicious way to begin Gaur Purnima celebrations from today by discussing pastimes of his Paramaguru, Madhavendra Puri. Madhavendra Puri was the spiritual master of Ishwara Puri, and Ishwara Puri was the spiritual master of Srila, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it is described that Madhavendra Puri came in the Madhava Sampradaya, in the Brahma Madhava Sampradaya, and he is the link between Madhava Sampradaya and the Gaudiya Madhava Sampradaya. He is actually that connecting link. Before Madhavendra Puri, in the Madhava Sampradaya, there was no pure devotional service in terms of conjugal love or love and separation and serving Radha and Krishna. That particular aspect was not present. It is described that most of the Madhavas from the Madhava Sampradaya, they worship the small form of Krishna. So they are described to be in Vatsalya Ras. So there is no gopi bhav, or there is no love for Radha and Krishna. There is no worship of Radha and Krishna. If we go to the Udipi temple, which is a Madhava temple, there also they worship Krishna who is standing with a stick, like in the small form of Krishna, as a cowherd boy. So in the Madhava Sampradaya, we will not find them worshipping Radha Krishna together. Neither will we find them worshipping Krishna in the mood which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually came to give, in the mood of separation from Krishna. But that is what Madhavendra Puri was actually experiencing. So it is said that he is the connecting link. The love and separation from Krishna that manifested from Madhavendra Puri, and then it was passed on to Ishwara Puri and then to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that is how the Gaudiya Brahma Madhava Sampradaya was formed. So the Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami begins the description of Madhavendra Puri's pastimes in Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Leela Chapter 4. And he begins that by describing the section of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just having taken sannyas. So he has taken sannyas already, and then we know that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to actually go and settle in Vrindavan. And he starts walking towards Vrindavan. However, some of the devotees, their hearts were breaking in separation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So they did not want him to go to Vrindavan. And how far is Navadvip from Vrindavan? So they knew if Chaitanya Mahaprabhu settles down in Vrindavan, they will not have darshan. Enough darshan, or they will not be often able to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So some of the devotees trick him. And you know, it was mainly Nityanand Prabhu's brainchild. He is very famous for all these tricks. So they trick him and they somehow bring him to the house of Advaita Acharya by telling him that the Ganga is Yamuna. So they trick him in all these ways and somehow they bring him to Shantipur, to the house of Advaita Acharya, where Sachi Mata was also present along with all the exalted devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And there Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was served a big feast. Sachi Mata personally cooks that feast. And then the Lord was requested that please don't go and settle in Vrindavan, because it will be so hard for us to have your darshan. We will all die in separation. So if you have to go to a holy place to settle down, then please go to Neelachal. Please go to Jagannath Puri, because that is not too far from Navadvip. And then we can also come and visit you very often over there. So the Lord, just to keep up the heart, because the Lord is very loving, He is Bhakta Vatsala. So to keep up the desire of His devotees, He agrees. He says, okay, I will then settle down in Jagannath Puri. I will make my residence over there. And then the Lord takes four associates with Him. Nityanand Prabhu was one of the associates. And they start walking towards Jagannath Puri. And on the way, they come to a temple which was known as the Gopinath Temple in Remunadhan. And it was in a small village of Balasur. So they come over there and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually stops over there. And he wants to take darshan of Gopinath. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu goes and pays obeisances to Gopinath in Remunadham, the crown of Gopinath falls down at the moment that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is paying obeisances. And it actually falls on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's head. It exactly fits on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's head. So it is described that this was the reciprocation between the Lord. He is the same Lord, but in His two forms. Gopinath was actually reciprocating with Himself in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by allowing that crown to fall on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's head. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the pujaris offer, that was a system in that temple, in the Remuna temple of Gopinath. They offer 12 pots of kheer prasad, kheer bhoga to the Lord. And it is said that kheer bhoga, that kheer which is made in that particular temple, is famous all over the world. It is described that there is no kheer which can compare to the taste of that particular kheer in this entire planet. And therefore that kheer is also known as Amrita Keli. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knew about that. So it is described that he had that lobha to taste that kheer. And therefore he stays at night, because that is only offered to the Lord at night before the Lord is put to sleep or put to rest. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stays there and then he gets that Mahaprasad. And all the devotees honor the kheer Mahaprasad. And at that time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sits and describes the glories of that Mahaprasad and the glories of Madhavendra Puri as he had heard from his guru Ishwara Puri. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu starts telling the associates the entire pastime of Madhavendra Puri from that particular chapter. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu begins the description by saying that Madhavendra Puri once had gone to Vrindavan. And Madhavendra Puri was such an exalted devotee that he would never go and beg for food. You know how sannyasis would do at that time. They would go and beg for food from people for their sustenance. But Madhavendra Puri had this habit that he would never go and beg for food. So he would just fast. If somebody doesn't themselves come and give him some food, he would just fast. And he would just continue chanting Hare Krishna, and he would just spend his days and nights like that. So Madhavendra Puri had come to Govardhan and he was resting. He just sat down under a tree on the banks of Govindkund. And while he is sitting over there, meditating on Krishna and chanting his holy names, there was a very little cowherd boy who comes over there. And he has come to him with a pot of milk. And he tells Madhavendra Puri, he says, "Oh Baba, oh Gosai, you haven't eaten since many days. Why don't you go and beg for food? See, now I have to come and give you this pot of milk. Why don't you have this milk now? You honor this milk and I will come and collect the pot later on from you. Because I have to go and I'm getting late to herd my cows and milk my cows." So then Madhavendra Puri asked this boy. He says, "How did you know that I have not eaten since many days?" And the boy replies that in our village there is a system that nobody should go hungry. So some cowherd ladies, some of the village ladies were passing by from this side and they saw you sitting like this, just meditating on Krishna, and they realized that you have not eaten and you are not going to go and beg for food. So they came and told me that you go and give this pot of milk to this Baba who is sitting under the tree, and that is why I have come to you. Now I have to go because I am in a hurry to herd my cows. Saying that, the boy goes away. So Madhavendra Puri honors that milk. And Madhavendra Puri had never tasted such nectar in his life. That milk was so nectarian in taste. So he has the milk and then he washes the pot. And then he is waiting, but he could not see that boy at all. That boy never returns to collect the pot back from him. And while chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, Madhavendra Puri dozes off because already night had fallen. So he dozes off and then he gets a dream. And in the same dream, the same boy appears to Madhavendra Puri. And he tells Madhavendra Puri that, "Oh Gosai, wake up. I want to show you where I'm lying since many, many years. Can you see this bush which is behind you? I'm lying there this since thousands of years. Can you please take me out? Because I have tolerated so much sun. It's so hot in Vrindavan. Plus when it rains, I've tolerated so much rain. So I'm really exhausted and I haven't eaten for years. So if you can call some villagers and take me out and then worship me." And he gives all instructions on how Madhavendra Puri should worship that deity. And saying so, he disappears from the dream. And then Madhavendra Puri wakes up and then he starts lamenting. Because he realized that the boy who had come to him with that pot of milk was none other than his worshipable deity Gopal. So he says, he laments and he's in ecstasy also. He says, "The Lord himself came personally to give me darshan and to give me this milk, but I could not recognize my Lord and I did not render any service to my Lord." Saying this, he's in ecstasy and he's rolling in the ground crying tears of separation from the Lord. But then he controls himself. He controls himself, and there is a very important lesson which Acharyas explain over here. They say that Madhavendra Puri did not continue lamenting. He did not continue his ecstasy. He actually curbs his ecstasy which he was feeling, the feelings of separation from Gopal that he was experiencing. He just curbs those feelings because he knew that now he has to execute the order of Lord Krishna. He has to execute and he has to perform the service which was expected of him. So that is a very important aspect, that we should not, pure devotees do not just go ahead with their own ecstasy. Our own feelings in devotional service do not matter. The execution of devotional service is what is more important, and executing the orders of Krishna or his representatives, our authorities, is more important than our own devotional ecstasies or feelings which we might have in bhakti. So then Madhavendra Puri gathers some villagers and he tells all of them that, "See, Gopal has instructed me like this. So we have to now install this deity and we have to first dig him out." So they actually, villagers come with spades and, digging tools and all, and they start, and it was a thick bush which had formed over there. It was quite thick and very wild. So they get big tools to cut off the bushes and then they dig out. And then they see a beautiful deity of Gopal, which is there in the earth. But that deity was so heavy, they realized. So then they had to call some strong men. And they all lift the deity, and as per the instructions of Gopal, who had come in the dream, they take the deity on top of Govardhan Hill. And then Madhavendra Puri makes a nice stone place over there, and then they install the deity over there. And the deity had said that, "I'm tired and I'm exhausted because of the scorching heat that I have been tolerating of Vrindavan. So give me bath with cooling water." So then Madhavendra Puri gathers all the villagers. And they all come, they collect thousands and thousands of pots of cooling water from Govind Kund. And then they bathe the Lord. And then Madhavendra Puri gives them instructions on how to properly install the deity. So they go through that entire process. They bring so many pots of milk. First they actually do with Panchagavya. Panchagavya are the five products which come from a cow, which is cow dung, cow urine, ghee, yogurt and milk. So first they do an abhishek with that, with Panchagavya. Then they also do an... Then they again bathe the Lord with, after they have done Panchagavya, Panchamrit and all the juices, then they again bathe the Lord with scented cool water, because the Lord was so hot, so they really wanted to cool the body down of the Lord. And after they had done that, they massage the body of the Lord with very nice fragrant oils. So they massage the body so that the body of the Lord now starts shining. So the deity was looking so beautiful now, because they had given all these abhishekhs, they had cooled down the body, they had massaged the body with very nice scented oils. And after that, Madhavendra Puri instructs them, all the villagers, that now we have to offer bhoga to the Lord, because the Lord has not eaten since thousands of years and the Lord told me he is very hungry. So all the villagers, now this brings out the aspect of selfless service of the Brajavasis, because it is said that all the villagers gather, and whatever bhoga they had, whatever grains and other things which they had in their storerooms, they utilized everything for the service of the Lord, because they realized that the Lord has not eaten. So Everything in their house was utilized. There were some Brahmin cooks who were actually employed, who were actually brought to cook for the Lord. And these Vrajvasis give everything away. And this is a lesson which, you know, we can learn from the selfless service of these Vrajvasis. So when they were called upon to render some service, they do not hold back. They do not think that, oh, if I give everything away, what is there in my house? What will I do tomorrow to feed my family? This is where the Vrajvasis differ from us. Sometimes when we go to Vrindavan, and we see nowadays, you know, in modern day Vrindavan, we tend to be judgmental of the behavior of the Vrajvasis, or we sometimes tend to look down because we see sometimes they come and, you know, are behind us for money or something like that. But these original Vrajvasis, you know, Prabhupada says that Vrajvasi, you cannot get birth in Vrindavan unless you are a devotee of Krishna. So Prabhupada always used to warn his disciples that do not ever criticize the Vrajvasis for any behavior. Never criticize even a dog or a mosquito or a cockroach or a pig in Vrindavan, because they are all exalted devotees who have taken birth in the holy place of Rajabhumi. So these Vrajvasis don't hold anything back in their homes. They give everything, and there were mountains and mountains of rice which were cooked for the Lord. There were mountains, thousands of chapatis, mountains of dal, so many different types of sabjis, so many different types of sweetmeats. So they do like what is called as an elaborate annakut ceremony for Gopal. And all this bhoga was offered to the Lord. So after this was done, after all the bhoga offering was done, after that Madhavendra Puri personally offers some scented water to the Lord to drink. Like how after you finish your meal, you have some water. And then they were in the consciousness that now Gopal is satisfied because we have offered all this bhoga to him. And then Madhavendra Puri tells all the people who were assembled over there that now this prasadam should be distributed to all the Vrajvasis who have come. So not only the village which had come to cook for Gopal, but even other villages, when they heard, they all came and they all honored the Mahaprasad of Gopal. But it is mentioned that Madhavendra Puri himself did not eat anything. He just waited till all the Vrajvasis were sumptuously fed. And after that, he just took a little bit of sweet rice. He just took a little bit of some sweet milk preparation. So this is one more important lesson. Like when we do elaborate offering to Krishna, when, you know, devotees do that, or in the temple it is done, the first thing in mind is, oh, I'm going to now enjoy this Mahaprasad. Sometimes we don't even wait for the entire Mahaprasadam prayer to be chanted, especially if it has been a fasting day. We quickly want to honor the Mahaprasad and we say, oh, we are doing devotional service by eating this Mahaprasad. But Madhavendra Puri was not in that consciousness. He absolutely was not attached that, oh, so much bhoga has been offered, now let me enjoy this Mahaprasad of the Lord. After he had seen to it that all the Vrajvasis had been fed to their full satisfaction, after that he just took a little bit of sweet milk to end. So Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains that this one wonderful festival was held in one day. So, and how it is impossible to hold such a big festival in one day, because they took the deity out, they did the entire Abhishek ceremony, and again, you know, bathing the Lord with so many different elements, and then preparing the bhoga, offering the bhoga, and then all the devotees honoring. So Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes that this wouldn't have been possible to be executed in one day. How can everything be possible? Such elaborate anakut, such elaborate abhishek, how is all this possible just in a single day? And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes that this is because of the empowerment of the Lord. Because all these devotees were completely engaged and their consciousness was how to satisfy Gopal, because he has been suffering from heat and cold. He has been suffering because he hasn't eaten for thousands of years. So their whole consciousness was to satisfy Gopal, and therefore Gopal empowers them to render so much service in one single day. And Acharyas explain, and they compare this to the example of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was an exalted devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he one day invites Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to his house for prasad. So this was in the morning, like mid-morning, he invites Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he says, come to my house for lunch. And then when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu goes for lunch, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya presents an elaborate feast to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And there were hundreds of varieties of preparation. And that were not just little, in big quantities, just Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya presents. And only Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and his wife had cooked. It was not that there was a whole team of devotees who had cooked. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was astonished. He actually asks, how did you manage this? You just invited me a few hours ago, and how have you managed to cook everything? And then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya replies that the person for whose satisfaction this has been cooked, he has actually executed everything. So, and he has executed all this. So, like, in a sense, he was trying to say that, you know, it was for your pleasure that it was being cooked, and it is you only who has done this cooking, who has used us as instruments to do this cooking for you. Otherwise, how is it possible for us to do? And that was the mood of all of the Vrajvasis as well. So, one, you know, the day that festival was done, then all the Vrajvasis wanted to participate, because there were so many small villages around Govardhan. And they all wanted to come, and they all wanted to do this Annakoot ceremony every day for the satisfaction of Gopal. So Madhavendra Puri engaged all these villagers. So it was the turn of one village per day to offer the Annakoot ceremony. So Gopal got Annakoot ceremony for many days, it is described, because every village came forward to do this for Gopal. And Madhavendra Puri was so satisfied that the service was being carried out so nicely. He trained pujaris how to worship Gopal nicely, and he himself personally saw to it that all the worship of Gopal was going on nicely. They constructed a small temple over there. Some rich aristocrats from Vrindavan came forward and they constructed a nice temple for Gopal. All the puja, big cooking vessels were donated by some devotees. So all this paraphernalia came. By Gopal's mercy, everything was arranged nicely for his worship to continue for many years to come. And then one day when Madhavendra Puri was resting, Gopal came to him in a dream. And Gopal told him that, see how much I had suffered because of the scorching heat of Vrindavan. So my body has still not cooled down. You did give me bath with so much water, like cooling water, but still my body is hot. I'm still suffering from that internal heat. So you please go to Jagannath Puri and you get some sandalwood paste and camphor for me from there. And mix it, grind the sandalwood paste, mix it and smear it all over my body for many days, so that then my body can cool down because of the chandan that is offered to me. And, you know, in those days, to go from Vrindavan to Jagannath Puri, it was not that they book, you know, Jet Airways or Indian Airlines flight, or nor do they book a train. So in those days, they had to walk. And Madhavendra Puri did not even hesitate for a moment. We see Madhavendra Puri's total surrender over you. He did not hesitate for a moment that how am I going to execute this difficult journey. Plus, sandalwood was a very precious commodity. So there were heavy taxes and tolls which were applied on sandalwood. It wasn't easy just, oh, okay, get sandalwood and come and bring it back. It would have been a very difficult thing to transport that sandalwood back from Jagannath Puri to Vrindavan. But still Madhavendra Puri knew that Gopal has given this order. He will only give me the means how to execute this order. Because Madhavendra Puri did not even have money to buy the sandalwood. And sandalwood is an expensive thing. So immediately Madhavendra Puri decided, yes, I'm going to go to travel to Jagannath Puri to get sandalwood for Gopal. So he then trains the pujaris and he sees to it that the worship will be carried on nicely while he's gone to Jagannath Puri to execute the order of Gopal. So after training pujaris and putting them in charge of Gopal's worship, Madhavendra Puri leaves and he starts traveling to Jagannath Puri. And on the way, he actually goes to Shantipur. And he lives in the house of Advaita Acharya for some time. And Advaita Acharya himself is a pure devotee of the Lord. So when he sees Madhavendra Puri, he sees those symptoms. He realizes, because it's said in English, it takes one to realize one. So Advaita Acharya was himself a pure devotee and he could see that Madhavendra Puri is also a pure devotee of the Lord from the symptoms and from all the ecstasies which Madhavendra Puri was exhibiting. So when Advaita Acharya realizes that this is a pure devotee of the Lord who has come to my house, he begs him for initiation. And at that time, Madhavendra Puri initiates Advaita Acharya. So Advaita Acharya and Ishwara Puri were therefore considered to be God brothers. And therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu always used to hold Advaita Acharya in lot of reverence. He would never consider him as a servant or never give any instructions or any, you know, allow Advaita Acharya to serve him, because he was the God brother of his guru. So after initiating Advaita Acharya, Madhavendra Puri continues on the way. And on the way to Jagannath Puri, he then comes to this temple of Gopinath in Remunadham. And he sees over there that very nicely worship is being carried out for Gopinath. And that is what a pure devotee's vision is. Whenever they go to some temple and if they see that there is very nice elaborate worship being done, then they actually want to learn. So Madhavendra Puri immediately went into that mood. That I can learn some good things which these pujaris are doing for Gopinath in this temple. So he asked the pujari, he asked various questions like, how do you render this service? What all do you offer to the Lord? How do you dress him? And as part of those questions, the pujari tells him that every night we offer a special preparation. We offer this kheer bhoga to the Lord, which is called as Amrita Keli. And that kheer is very famous. The Lord really relishes it and it's very famous all over the earth. So Madhavendra Puri stays and he sees that this nice kheer bhoga is being offered to the Lord. And at that time a small thought comes in his mind. He thinks that I wish I could taste this kheer so that I can then make the same type of kheer for my Gopal in Vrindavan. But as soon as that thought comes in his mind, he condemns himself. He says, how can I think like this? What sort of a devotee I am? Here the bhoga is still being offered to the Lord. He has not even honored that bhoga. And I am thinking of my own sense gratification. I just want to satisfy my tongue. So thinking like that, he feels very guilty. And he just goes away. He pays obeisances and he goes away from there. And he hides in a marketplace of that particular village, of Remuna village, just thinking guilty and chanting Hare Krishna Mahamantra, saying that, oh, I'm such a big sinner. I'm thinking of my own tongue, satisfying my own senses. When the Lord has to be satisfied, look at me, what a fallen condition I am. So lamenting like that and feeling guilty, he's chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. And unaware of all this, the pujari has now put the Lord to rest. And he has gone to sleep. The pujari of Gopinath who had offered the kheer bhoga to the Lord. And after he goes to sleep, Gopinath comes to him in a dream. And Gopinath tells him, oh pujari, wake up. Go into my altar once again. I have actually stolen one pot of kheer and I have kept it behind my cloth curtain, which is behind me. Go and take that pot of kheer and go and give it to my devotee Madhavendra Puri. He actually wanted to have this kheer so that he can then offer it to me in my different form as Gopal in Vrindavan. So go and seek out this Madhavendra Puri and go and give this kheer which I have stolen for him. So the pujari wakes up from the dream and he's very, very amazed and intrigued that how, you know, he had never had such an unusual dream. So first he could not believe that this is true. So he says, let me still go and see. So he takes a bath and then he goes into the altar room. And actually, according to his dream, he sees there is one pot of rice behind the curtain. And he's amazed. He said, how did I not count? Because when they offer 12 pots, they take 12 pots out after the bhoga has been honored by the Lord. So he says, how did this happen? How did I not count? So he was very confused. But obviously, it was the Lord's inconceivable potency which was at work for the satisfaction of his devotee. So then the pujari goes into the marketplace. And he's crying out, is there anyone called Madhavendra Puri over here? The Lord has stolen a pot of rice for kheer for you. Please come and get it. So then Madhavendra Puri very hesitatingly comes forward and he accepts this pot of kheer from the pujari. And the pujari immediately offers prostrated obeisances to Madhavendra Puri. He says that this has never happened in the history of Gopinath. That, you know, like this, the Lord himself stole one pot of kheer for you. So he says, you are an exalted devotee. Why would the Lord do this otherwise? Why would the Lord care that you wanted this kheer and why would he know your innermost desire? And he would do this. So the Lord is so pleased with you that he has done this for you. So the pujari is so overwhelmed that he is meeting such a pure devotee. See, or he offers that kheer to him. And from that day onwards, the name of the temple changes. The name of the deity changes. His name becomes famous as Kheer Chor Gopinath. That is the name of the temple even today in Remuna Dham. Because he was a chor. He stole the kheer for his devotee's pleasure. So he's known as Kheer Chor Gopinath from now. So Madhavendra Puri then sits down and honors the kheer. And he realizes that what nectar they were cooking. And he's thinking that I will now offer this nectar to my deity, Gopal. And in that way, Madhavendra Puri is in ecstasy. And he washes the pot and he keeps the pot in his cloth. And it is described that for a year, Madhavendra Puri then keeps breaking this pot also and he keeps honoring these pieces of pot throughout the year because he did not even want that pot to go waste because it was a pot which the Lord had personally stolen from him. This much he valued the Mahaprasad which was given to him by the Lord. So even the pot pieces he used to break a little piece of the pot and eat the piece of the pot also every day. For many years he continued like that. So then Madhavendra Puri decides that I have to leave Remuna Dham immediately. I cannot continue staying over here because the reason was that he was averse to fame and recognition. He was averse to pratishtha. He immediately thought that the Lord has stolen kheer for me. The pujari knows about this. Obviously, he is going to go and tell other devotees that the Lord has done this for Madhavendra Puri. So immediately people will start thinking, I'm such an honorable Vaishnava, and they will come and, you know, pay obeisances to me and give me lots of respect and this. So I don't want this fame and prestige. So he immediately leaves in the night from Remunadham and he goes to Jagannath Puri. However, it is said that if the Lord wants a devotee to become famous, then no one can stop that from happening. So Madhavendra Puri's fame always preceded him. Wherever he went, whichever village he was passing through to reach Jagannath Puri, everybody in that village knew that, oh, this is that famous Madhavendra Puri for whom the Lord had stolen creed. So whichever village he entered, all the people used to come, rush forward. They used to give him lots of honor and respect. And in this way, Madhavendra Puri reached Jagannath Puri. And by the time he reached Jagannath Puri, obviously people in Jagannath Puri had also come to know of this. So, you know, in those days there was no internet or Facebook or WhatsApp that the messages would be spread. But still, because this was a glorious thing which had happened for this devotee, by word of mouth the message had spread till Jagannath Puri from Remuna. So when he goes to Jagannath Puri, all the devotees over there again, you know, honor him, and they have known that Madhavendra Puri is an exalted Vaishnava like this. So Madhavendra Puri tells them the purpose for which he had come. He says that I have come because the Lord has ordered me to bring some chandan back for him. And that is why I have come to gather this chandan for him. So if you all can please help me arrange some chandan and some camphor, I will take it back for my Gopal. Because his body is suffering from scorching heat. We need to cool down his body. So immediately all the devotees in Jagannath Puri get, you know, together to execute this order of Madhavendra Puri. So very nice large quantity of chandan was collected. In fact, it is said that 48 pounds of chandan was given, which is around 23 to 25 kilos of chandan was given to Madhavendra Puri. So in these days itself, it is so much. In those days, this was very, very invaluable, the price of that much chandan. And along with that camphor, a huge quantity of camphor was also given to Madhavendra Puri. And then Madhavendra Puri starts his return journey back. And the devotees warn him that when you go back, since you are carrying this chandan with you, obviously there are going to be attacks because people, there will be so many, you will be passing through many uninhabited paths, you will be passing through jungles and all. So you'll have to really be careful of robbers and murderers. They might come and try to get this chandan from you. So they were given, Madhavendra Puri was given two assistants by the Jagannath Puri devotees, that take these two assistants with you, they will help you and they will help you carry this chandan till Vrindavan. So again, you know, this shows an exalted quality of Madhavendra Puri. So he was an exalted Vaishnava. He could have just sat in one place and executed his own devotional service. But he knew that this had to be done for the service of the Lord. So even understanding that there are so many obstacles that are now going to come in my path when I take this chandan back, it did not deter him from executing and from fulfilling the order of the Lord. So with that great determination in heart, he starts walking back from Jagannath Puri to Vrindavan. And on the way, he once again, because Remuna comes on the way, he once again visits the temple of Gopinath because he wanted to pay obeisances to Gopinath before proceeding further. So he goes there and he pays obeisances. The pujari once again gives him the Mahaprasad, which he honors. And then when he's resting at night, Gopinath comes in a dream to him. And even Gopal comes in a dream to him. In fact, Gopal comes and tells him that, O Madhavendra Puri, do not take the trouble to come till Vrindavan. You offer this chandan to my form as Gopinath in Remunadham. Apply this chandan all over the body of Gopinath in my form as Gopinath, and please understand that I have accepted this chandan as your Gopal deity in Vrindavan, and my body will cool down by you offering this chandan to Gopinath. So Madhavendra Puri gets up and he realizes that now this is the Lord's order. He does not want me to go till Vrindavan. So here there is a reciprocation. Madhavendra Puri was ready to execute the order of the Lord, even though he knew he is going to face obstacles. Especially he was going to pass through some Muslim villages on the way to Vrindavan. And Mohammedans were very much against devotional service and all that at that time. So they would have even killed Madhavendra Puri for carrying such large quantities of chandan just to worship a deity. So Gopal knew this and he wanted to reciprocate now with Madhavendra Puri. So Madhavendra Puri surrendered. He was happy to still go through those obstacles, but Gopal did not want his devotee to go through those obstacles. So he comes in his dream and he tells him that just offer all this chandan here only in Remuna. No need to bring it till Vrindavan. My body will get cooled down if you do this. So then Madhavendra Puri tells the pujari about this. And the two people whom he had got for her, with him from Jagannath Puri, he engages them. So every day their service was to grind the chandan mixed with camphor and apply a nice paste over Gopinath's body. And Madhavendra Puri stayed in Gopinath Dham, in Remuna Dham, till all the chandan was exhausted. And it was applied every day to the body of Gopinath. So in this way, Madhavendra Puri had this reciprocation with Gopal and Gopinath. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is describing these pastimes about Madhavendra Puri sitting in the temple of Gopinath to his associates who had come over there. And then he questions Nityanand Prabhu. He says that, Nityanand Prabhu, can you just imagine the good fortune? Do you think there is anybody in this world who is more fortunate than Madhavendra Puri? The Lord first of all gave him personal darshan. Then he came in his dream 3 times to give him instructions. And he engaged him in executing personal devotional service to him. There is no one more fortunate in this entire world than Madhavendra Puri. So in this way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was glorifying the qualities and the devotional service of Madhavendra Puri as if he had 4 mouths. And he then concludes this whole story of Madhavendra Puri. And because today is the disappearance day of Madhavendra Puri, we'll just discuss for another few minutes about how Madhavendra Puri disappeared from this world and some important lessons we can learn from his disappearance in this world. So this pastime has been described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It has been described in the Antya Leela of Chaitanya Charitamrita. And that chapter describes actually the pastime of a devotee called Ramachandra Puri. And in that chapter, then the passing away of Madhavendra Puri is also described. So it is, the chapter starts with Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami offering obeisances to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And it says that, I offer obeisances to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was very scared of the criticism of Ramachandra Puri. And who actually was not wanting Ramachandra Puri to criticize him, and therefore he used to take action. The shloka starts like that in that chapter. And then Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes the passing away of Madhavendra Puri from this world. So it is said that during his last days, Madhavendra Puri was completely bedridden. He was very old, so he was completely bedridden. And he was exhibiting the highest symptoms of Krishna prem and highest symptoms of love and separation from Krishna. So he was exhibiting symptoms similar to Radharani, what Radharani and all the gopis exhibit when Krishna was leaving Vrindavan. Those were the symptoms he was exhibiting during his final days in this world. And he was lamenting and crying in separation from Krishna. He was saying, "Oh Krishna, when will I have actually missed you. I have missed Mathura. When will I get that vas, Mathura vas? When will I get to see you? When will I get to worship you? I have been, so fallen that I never realized this. I never got your worship, an opportunity to worship you. I did not render any devotional service to you." So this is the mood of a pure devotee. He always feels whatever he has done is not enough devotional service. And in that mood of separation, Madhavendra Puri was lamenting continuously. So Madhavendra Puri had 2 disciples at that time next to him. One was Ramachandra Puri and one was Ishwara Puri. Ishwara Puri, who is the spiritual master of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Ramachandra Puri was a god brother of Ishwara Puri. So Ramachandra Puri had started associating with some Mayavadis. So he had started imbibing the impersonal mood. So even though he was initiated by Madhavendra Puri, he had somehow deviated and he had now started traversing the impersonal path. So when he saw that his spiritual master was lamenting like that in separation from Krishna and crying in ecstasy, he actually dared to instruct his spiritual master. And Prabhupada describes in that section that this is one of the biggest offenses a devotee can do, a disciple can do, that he actually instructs his spiritual master about something. So he says sometimes, spiritual masters might ask advice from their disciples. Like Prabhupada used to take lots of tips and advice from his Western disciples. He said he used to say that my dancing white elephant. So he knew they had lots of creativity. So he used to take lots of advice on how to spread Krishna consciousness that would suit the Western world. So he used to take advice. So but if the spiritual master asks for advice, the disciple might give him some suggestions or some tips in the mood of executing the spiritual master's order and rendering devotional service to him. And in the same way, Krishna used to ask Uddhava for advice. Uddhava was Krishna's advisor actually when Krishna was living in Dwarka. But Uddhava is an exalted devotee. So it was not that Uddhava was doing an offense by giving instructions to Krishna. No, Krishna used to ask him for advice, and in the mood of serving Krishna, Uddhava used to then render some instructions or give some advice on how certain matters can be executed. But in this particular case, Ramachandra Puri started giving his unsolicited advice to Ishwara Puri. So this is something, a big lesson for all of us as disciples. You know, first of all, don't give unsolicited advice when it is not asked, especially to your guru. So Ramachandra Puri started instructing Madhavendra Puri, and he started telling him that you call yourself a Paramahamsa Vaishnava, then why are you lamenting and crying like this? People who are exalted Paramahamsa should not lament. So why, just concentrate and focus your mind fully on Brahman. This is the instruction which Ramachandra Puri gives to Madhavendra Puri. And that was because if you see Mayavadi philosophy, they always call about, you know, na sochati na brahma bhuta prasannatma, na sochati na kankshati. So people who are on the Brahman platform should not lament, should not cry. But they forget that this is for material hankerings and material lamentation. But Madhavendra Puri was not lamenting for some material desires. He was lamenting out of his highest ecstasy of love and separation from Krishna. So his lamentation was on a transcendental platform. But Ramachandra Puri does not realize that, and he gives instructions, oh, you should meditate on Brahman, that way your lamentation will go away. So he gives these instructions to him, and Madhavendra Puri becomes so angry because this was an obstacle on him actually remembering Krishna and, you know, executing his mood of love and separation from Krishna. So he rebukes Ramachandra Puri and he says, you rascal, you go away from here because you are coming in the way of me remembering Krishna. So it is mentioned that generally a spiritual master would not rebuke his disciple. But in this particular case, Madhavendra Puri did that because this was really an obstacle on him in his path of remembering Krishna at the time of his death. And that too, you know, he is instructing him to remember Brahman. A devotee actually derides having any Brahman realizations when he is specially about to leave the world. So he then tells Ramachandra Puri to go away. And Prabhupada describes over there, and Acharyas have explained, that when you actually offend a Vaishnava, especially an exalted Vaishnava, especially who is your own Guru Maharaj, if you offend them, then there are three manifestations that can happen because of offending a great Vaishnava. The first thing that will happen is lots of material desires will come up in your heart. So we sometimes see in our devotional service, this is like a checkpoint for us, a lesson we can learn. If we see that lots of material desires are coming up in our heart, then we should really introspect and we can see that, have I offended any Vaishnava? Why are these material desires suddenly rising in my heart? It might not just be offense to Vaishnava, it might be just laxity in our own sadhana. But again, that laxity might also come because of some unknowing or knowing offenses that we have done to a Vaishnava. So this is one lesson we can learn from Madhavendra Puri's passing away, that when Ramachandra Puri did like this, there were, you know, it can sprout lots and lots of material desires, and a devotee will feel completely overwhelmed by these material desires that come up in his heart. So that is one fall down that can happen, that material desires come up in your heart. The second thing that can happen to devotees who offend exalted Vaishnava especially is that you might be, Krishna kicks you out. Purijan Prabhu actually says that when, you know, some devotees say that, oh, I have exercised the choice that I don't want to do devotional service. It is not that you have exercised the choice. It is that Krishna has kicked you out. So if anybody stops chanting or if anybody stops taking to the path of devotional service, it is maybe sometimes because they have offended some Vaishnava which Krishna has not liked, and therefore he has kicked you out of his devotional service. So you can then deviate into the impersonal path. If you offend Vaishnavas, you will deviate from the path of pure bhakti and you will start getting attracted to Mayavad philosophy, to impersonalists. And the third thing which can happen when you offend Vaishnavas is that you get more and more prone to finding faults in Vaishnavas. And that is what happened with Ramachandra Puri. So Ramachandra Puri comes to Jagannath Puri just to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And it is described in that chapter that Ramachandra Puri had this habit of inviting Vaishnavas over to his house. He would cook volumes of prasadam, like huge quantities of prasadam he would cook, and he would force those Vaishnavas to eat that prasadam. Same thing he did with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as well. He cooked an elaborate feast and then he forced him to eat. And after he himself has forced, and because the devotee has eaten, because Ramachandra Puri has forced, then he would start criticizing. See, What a fallen Vaishnava you are. How can you call yourself a sannyasi? How can you eat so much? Sannyasis are meant to be very frugal in their eating. They cannot eat so much quantities. They should love, just live on begging, and whatever alms they get, that's all that they should honor. But look at you honoring this big feast. So this is how Ramachandra Puri used to do. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually was very scared of the criticism of Ramachandra Puri. So he actually reduced his eating. And devotees absolutely did not like this. You know, the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's own exalted devotees, they used to love to feed the Lord. But when they saw that the Lord was restricting his eating because of Ramachandra Puri's rebuking, they were very, very upset with Ramachandra Puri. But this is what happens to a devotee who has offended his guru or any advanced Vaishnava, that you get a tendency of fault finding. And that actually further, it's a vicious cycle. It further, you know, gets you entangled into Vaishnava Prat because you are finding faults, and it further takes you away from the path of pure devotional service. However, in the same chapter, the exalted service of Ishwara Puri is described. So Ishwara Puri was a very menial servant of Madhavendra Puri. He was not only rendering service to his spiritual master, he used to even clean his stool and urine, because Madhavendra Puri was bedridden, and very happily he used to render this service. And he used to actually read nicely from the Bhagavatam just to enhance the mood which Madhavendra Puri was in. He realized that my Guru Maharaj is right now in the mood of separation from Krishna. To enhance that mood, he would then select verses from Bhagavatam or from different scriptures, and he would read accordingly to Madhavendra Puri. And Madhavendra Puri was so pleased with Ishwara Puri's service that he blesses him profusely. He embraces him and blesses him, saying that you will become an exalted Vaishnava. You will become a pure devotee. And through you, so much devotional service will be executed to the Lord. I bless you and I'm empowering you. And because of that empowerment, we see that Ishwara Puri received from his spiritual master. He became the spiritual master of none other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chose Ishwara Puri to be his spiritual master just because he knew the divine qualities of Ishwara Puri and the way he had served his own spiritual master. So in that mood, in this separation from Krishna, which Madhavendra Puri started for the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, in that mood then Madhavendra Puri left this world, and it was on this day, like this is the disappearance day of Madhavendra Puri. So we've gone over time. I'll stop the class here, and if anybody has any questions or corrections. Yes. Thank you, Mataji. Sorry?
Incarnation
of Jatila. Jatila is the mother-in-law of Radharani. From what I've heard from different acharyas in our sampradaya, and what we learned from this lesson today of Madhavendra Puri's passing away, when we offend Vaishnavas, first of all, our taste for chanting and for devotional service starts diminishing. So that is one checkpoint. If we see that our taste for devotional service is going away, then we can introspect and we can see that maybe I have offended someone. And therefore, if you see in our morning program, we always offer obeisances after Tulsi Aarti. We say Vancha Kalpataruvyascha. So there might be sometimes unknowing offenses which we might be committing to some Vaishnavas. And therefore, that prayer is chanted every morning before we all sit down for chanting, that I offer my obeisances to all these devotees. And at that time, in our heart, we can take the opportunity to pray to the Lord that I might have offended some of these devotees unknowingly, so please pardon me or reveal it to me in my heart. Because there might be some devotee who might be very hurt in their heart, but we might not be aware. So then we pray to the Lord that if I have offended any devotee like that, you reveal it to me so that I can then go and seek forgiveness from that devotee. But the Vancha Kalpataruya prayer is mainly in our, the mood should be that we are seeking forgiveness for any offenses that we might have committed to the lotus feet of Vaishnava. So that is one milestone that we can see. The second milestone we can see is material desires are increasing in the heart. You know, some habits which we might have given up when we were non-devotees and we had some habits, but we can see those are coming back slowly. We are getting inclinations to actually act on the material desire which is coming up. Because Material desires are going to be there in the heart, always. Because we are in this body and we are in this world. So it's not that we are not on that, especially speaking of me, we are not on that pure devotional platform, that there won't be any desires in the heart. But it is said that when the desires rise in the heart, we just, you know, grind our teeth together and control. We don't act on the desire. But if we see that we have started acting on the desires which are coming up in our heart slowly, everything doesn't happen like as a bang, so that, you know, you get like that bulb that, oh, I've committed some offense to a Vaishnava. It happens very gradually. So if we see that slowly the inclination is there to start acting on the desires which are coming up in my heart, then that is one more milestone or one more checkpoint for us, if that, have I offended any Vaishnava? This is an introspection I can do. So these are some of them. You know, the highest thing is you fall down from devotional service. You completely deviate and leave the path of devotees, of devotional service.
Why does Lord choose always a dream as a medium to instruct his devotees, whereas we condemn or we look down upon dreams in this current world as some sort of hallucinations or something, which are not very subtle or not very real, which are not considered to be real. Whereas Lord always, most of the cases which you explained in past times, Lord chooses dreams to be the medium to instruct his devotees.
Prabhuji is asking that why does the Lord choose dreams as a medium to instruct his devotees, when actually we don't hold dreams in very high esteem. We don't, you know, act on our dreams, like any whimsical dream that we might have received, we don't start acting on them. So if we see these, the Lord is revealing himself in dreams or giving instructions in dreams, but it's mainly with pure devotees, with exalted devotees who will realize that it was not a hallucination. So that therefore the Lord does not come into specially my dreams to give me some instructions. For devotees like us, it is the instructions of our Diksha and Siksha Gurus that we have to act on. And we do not tell, oh, the Lord told me in my dream. We do not act like that whimsically based on our dreams. But the Lord will do that only with his pure devotees many of the times. But as practicing devotees, even if we get a dream where, you know, we have had something about some aspect of devotional service, or Krishna has come and told us something, then it is always good to actually sound it off or bounce it off with your Siksha Guru or your Diksha Guru and ask them that, see, I got this dream. Like sometimes in our dreams, we might receive some instructions, you know, go increase your book distribution or something. So that might be a projection of something, some unsatisfied thing which might be there in our heart, which might be good. So if any dream which is helping us perform our devotional service better, it's good only, but still it is good once to check with your authority. For example, if especially in the temple, if some devotee has been engaged in a certain service and then he says, oh, I got a dream that Krishna is asking me to do this service, so now I'm going to do that service. But then it's a conflict. It's a conflict with what your authorities have told you. So therefore, we don't just act on the dream whimsically. Especially practicing devotees are like us. We always take blessings and we always ask our authorities and take their instructions. So for us, yes, dreams are whimsical. For us, it is the instructions of our authorities and our Siksha Guru and Diksha Guru which are more important than dreams. But for exalted Vaishnavas, the Lord directly instructs them in their dreams.
On that point, I'll say something. I remember when you would be a dream which came to me. I'm not a pure devotee at all, but this dream came from Prabhupada. He came in my dream and said, can you please help Kurma Prabhu? He is writing a book on adventure in Australia. So can you give some money he needs for making the picture, you know, for the pictures, blocks. And he had no money. And next day in the morning I asked, no, please help me. I have no money at all. I'm just thinking how to get all the block printed. So I'm just giving an example that this is a very important fact, that if you have reached such a status,
enhance our devotional service to the Lord. For example, what Mahatma Prabhu is explaining. So I, you know, in that situation we can see the Lord is actually, Prabhupada is reciprocating with Kurma Prabhu as well. Not only accepting his Mahatma Prabhu service, but also Kurma Prabhu must have prayed fervently to maybe Prabhupada and to Krishna that I want to publish this book, but I'm falling short of money. You please help me. And then the Lord instructed Prabhupada instructed him in his dream. So if something helps us, you know, enhance our devotional service, there is no harm. But if we feel there's going to be a conflict, then it is always a good advice to check with our authorities.
Srila Prabhupada is still acting over this Melbourne temple, how to organize these activities. From spiritual world, he is telling us how to do, what to do. So this is the pure devotee. Empowered by Krishna, not good.
Yes,
dreams are functional intelligence, so sometimes, you know, sometimes when we dream, we can see the situation much better than with our mind, and sometimes the intelligence through the dreams wants to tell us something, what we need to work on. I have so many examples. Like once I was dreaming, and I was dreaming it's earthquake, and I saw in the dream how the room cracked, you know, the ceiling cracked. And I woke up and I forgot about the dream, and then I was listening the news, and they said that they had an earthquake, and I went in the room where I was, and I saw the crack exactly like it was in the dream. And then I saw, this is one part of me is scanning everything. And Prabhupada said actually when we sleep, we get out of our energy body, our subtle body, with our soul gets out, and we experience different, different reality. And there was one thing he was affected to give example to understand it better. There was one king who was dreaming that he was getting attacked, I don't know, by animal or whatever. And he had a nightmare, and he woke up, and he was so overwhelmed, he was so confused, and he with the subtle body. And this, the day, what happens to our dream, the day that our gross body is our daydream. Mm-hmm. So, unless we are away from the course, we will be in a dream, daydream or nightdream. But nightdream is the dreaming, is the function of intelligence, and can help us understand things a little bit more than through our senses, what we can do in our mind.
Thank you, Mataji.
Srila Prabhupada has written in several places how Lord is helping us, super soul. Because when we take a new body from the previous life, we are remembering, because super soul is telling us that you wanted to do this thing, now you do this. Because when we take birth, we forget everything. The pain is so intense when we are born from the womb of the mother. We forget everything about the past time. It is the super soul which initiates us. That now you have to do this thing, this thing, this thing. And then we start our process. So the Lord is telling everything to us. He's maintaining us in everything. Everything we need. Only
thank
thing
you so
we forget about.
It's time up. We'll end the class here. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.